Hi, Women of Strength. Before we jump into today's episode, I just wanted to share something that's really close to my heart. If you're planning a VBAC or even just starting to think about one, you don't have to piece everything together on your own. You don't have to find every blog or hunt down a specific podcast episode. The VBAC Link Parent Prep Course was created by our founders, Julie and Megan, who are doulas and VBAC moms themselves. I actually took it when I was preparing for my own VBAC, long before I was a host of the podcast, just as a mom who needed clarity, confidence, and evidence-based information. So I can say, from a personal standpoint, that I know you'll love it. We also have a VBAC birth plan guidebook with a drag and drop template, and that's the exact template I used for my own VBAC birth. It made communicating with my care team so much more smooth. So if you're looking for practical, supportive VBAC prep from people who truly get it, you can find both the course and the guidebook at thevbaclink.com. All right, let's get into today's episode. Hello, Women of Strength. Welcome back to the VBAC Link podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Lily, and I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Paige. We are so excited to be here. If you are listening and you are planning your VBAC, we are with you, and we are so excited to share with you today a story from our friend Erin. She joins us as a twin VBAC mom, and we are so stoked to hear more of her story. And before we get into that, I am going to read a little bit about Erin, and then I'll hand it over to Paige for a review of the week. All right. Well, sweet Erin says that she is a proud mom of four, a five-year-old at the time of recording, an almost three-year-old, and one-year-old twins. She is a registered dietitian who is passionate about helping others live balanced and nourished lives. And after experiencing multiple births, including a VBAC and then a twin VBAC, she's excited to share her journey, her insights, and her encouragement with other moms navigating their own paths. Between motherhood and nutrition, her goal is to inspire confidence, connection, and self-care in every season of life. So we are sincerely so excited to hear her story today. But before we do, we're going to get into a review of the week with Paige.
Thank you, Lily. I have a review from Apple Podcasts today. And it is sent to us from LM11. This was back in April of 2025. And it was titled, Listening to Friends. Listening to this podcast feels like catching up with old friends. These women bring together powerful stories to help any woman process and plan birth. Most stories made me sob with joy and feel the togetherness of all birthing women. I was able to experience a recent VBAC. And the women who organize this podcast and the women who share their stories are all a part of my journey. Thank you for all that you do. And thank you for that review. I feel the same way when I first found this podcast. Hearing Megan and Julie's voices, the original hosts, it really felt like we were catching up with old friends. And I loved following their life and following what they were doing. And now having Lily and then getting to interview and hear some of our Women of Strength stories as well. It feels the same. So our podcast would not be what it is without our community. And we're so happy to have Erin here joining us. And if you have not left a review for us yet, but would like to, you can do that on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It helps bring us so much joy. And it also helps people find our podcast. And we would love to read your review on the next episode. So please do that.
Hi, I'm Lily.
And I'm Paige. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast.
We're moms and doulas who know firsthand that birth after cesarean isn't always straightforward. I'm a miscarriage and ectopic mom who went on to have a hospital water birth VBAC.
And I've had two CBACs and a planned maternal assisted cesarean.
Our experiences may be different, but our mission is the same: to make birth after cesarean better.
On this podcast, you'll hear powerful stories of VBACs, repeat cesareans, and CBACs from women around the world.
We'll also bring in expert insight, practical tools, and encouragement to help you feel informed and supported as you plan your next birth.
Whether you're preparing for a VBAC, choosing a repeat cesarean, or simply exploring your options, this space is for you.
Because every story matters, and we're here to remind you that you've got options, you've got support, and you're never alone.
The VBAC Link is storytelling by nature. The stories on this podcast do not represent a universally best or safest option for everyone.
This podcast is intended to encourage and inform. It does not replace individualized advice from a qualified medical provider. Yay! Alrighty. Well, Women of Strength, we are so excited for you to hear from Erin. So Erin, the floor is yours. We are going to sit back, relax, and just listen to you and your beautiful stories. So We're excited.
All right. So I'm really excited to share my stories. I have had quite the experience between, you know, my five-year-old's birth with COVID and then transitioning to a healing VBAC and then ultimately ending with a twin VBAC. So, but starting off with my C-section baby, right? You can't have a C-section VBAC without a C-section. So I'll start, you know, from the beginning. My husband and I, you know, we got married in October of 2018. We decided that pretty quickly that we wanted to have a family. I will say that for us, it was a pretty quick process. I thought it would take longer, but we actually got pregnant on the very first try, which was very shocking. Yeah, it was crazy, but we were so excited. I will say, like, my pregnancy with my first daughter was pretty standard, I guess. I mean, I had like extreme like nausea and stuff in her pregnancy. But other than that, like, it was pretty standard. I decided to go with midwives. So I'm from Long Island and I used Stony Brook midwives and they were amazing. And I actually did something called a centering program. I don't know if you guys have ever heard that before.
No. I haven't. Tell us more.
Okay, so the centering program, it's really cool. It's like a group prenatal care class. So what you do is you go to the center and then you meet with the midwife. She would check you, like, do your, you know, check the heartbeat, and you would, you know, get all like your blood pressure and, you know, all that stuff. And then you would meet for an educational class. So you would be on nutrition, it would be on doula, it would be like doula services, like, and just education about that. It would be on breastfeeding or, you know, how to baby wear, like just tip, like different topics. And it was just awesome because you were surrounded by women who were this about the same, it would go by month. So it's like everyone that was doing like April of 2020 was in that, in my centering group. And it was awesome. I don't know what places have it or not, but it was a great experience. I was GBS positive. So that was really the only thing about my pregnancy, just because I knew, like, when my water broke that they did want me to come in. So I did choose a midwife group that I wanted to deliver in the hospital. So the most prevalent thing about my birth was that I was 38 weeks pregnant when the world shut down. So it was a really scary time, really, really high anxiety on all parts, right? From my husband and I and our families to the hospital staff to the midwife. Like, it was just new for everybody, right? So that was pretty scary. I also live in New York, and there was, you know, everyone saying, like, partners not being allowed to be at your birth. And it was really, really, really scary times, right? So I ultimately, you know, prepped myself. I tried to mentally prepare myself. Like, I'm going to a hospital. Like, this is just what it is. I'm 38 weeks pregnant. This is my plan. And, you know, kind of just accepted that. And ultimately my water broke at 39 weeks and 5 days. It was 1:45 in the morning when my water broke. And I will say my water broke like how it does in the movies. And I know people are like, it's not going to happen that way. For me, it did. It did. It trickled. I felt it. And I was like, oh my gosh. And then I stood up and gushed down. Like, I was like, okay, there was no confusing. That was my water. But I felt really anxious right away. I just was like, oh my gosh, this is happening. I never had any medical issues happen. So it was just very scary going into this birth. The midwife, they were great. They were like, take your time, eat, take a shower, like, just check the baby's movements and then make your way in, like, whenever, you know, whenever you can. I would say we got there around like 3:30 in the morning and they checked me. I was about like 1 centimeter. So, you know, I needed the antibiotics because I was GBS positive. But when they checked me and my contractions weren't picking up. So, and they did this cervical check. And I remember I never got a cervical check before that. And it was so painful, the first one. I will say that none of my other ones have ever been like that. But for whatever reason, like, that was, I just remember that being really painful. And I also, the environment at that time was really high stress. Like, I mean, again, I'm walking into hospital, New York, height of COVID. Like, it was real stressful time. So everyone's like on edge. And yeah, so it just you know, just the perfect storm, I guess, for my first birth. So she wound up giving me, the antibiotics, and then they gave me Cytotec, so to help soften the cervix and everything. And I have to say that after they gave me the Cytotec, I was like up on the floor, they admitted me. It was a whirlwind right from there. So it had to have been within the first hour, 10 people running into the room, moving me around, putting oxygen on my nose. Her heart rate was decelerating. So right away, for some reason, she was not tolerating the medication and, you know, or the contractions that were coming. They started also coming like back to back. Like I wasn't dilated, but my body was just like, I was getting like back to back contractions, like really strong. So I remember the midwife came in, and again, high stress environment. She was not handling it well. And she was like, you know, if you want an epidural, you really should get it because, you know, you might need a C-section. And I just remember hearing those words, like, what? C-section? Like, no, I chose midwives. Like, I did all the things. I worked out, I stretched, I did yoga. Like, no way. Like, but, and again, I don't think she handled it the best way for someone. Like, I was like, I couldn't believe that that's what, and then she wound up telling me, I'm glad you're not one of those women that decided to have a home birth because of COVID, because of what's happening right now with your birth. So again, just making me like really, really anxious. The midwife that actually did the centering program was scheduled to be on call next. And I remember it was just coming on to shift change. And so she's like, you know, we could wait and see, like, but her heart rate keeps decelerating. Like, it happened twice where like people ran into the room and she's like, do you want to wait for Michelle and see what she has to say? And I was like, I trust Michelle with my life. Like, she was my person. Like, she was like my midwife. And I just remember her coming into the room, like the most gentle angel, and just hugging me. And she's like, we need to go right now. Like, right now you have to be wheeled in to the C-section. Like, you know, and I just remember I was hysterical crying, and yeah, but it was like, I trusted her, like that she had my best interest. She knew me like for all these months, and you know, it felt like, okay, this is the right decision. We're doing it right. So I do have to say my C-section experience wasn't bad. My hospital, I have to say, was amazing. The anesthesiologist was funny. He was trying to keep it so light. He actually wound up taking all the pictures because my husband like didn't bring his phone in, because I didn't. Who knew you could bring a phone in an OR? We didn't. So the anesthesiologist took all these pictures. He like texted it to us. Like, I was like, thank God, because we have all these beautiful pictures of when like she came out and everything. And
that's so
it amazing. Was so nice. Honestly, even the OB that came in to do the C-section was super nice. Like, everyone was just like, the nurse that came in, she just hugged me and just told me her story. And I felt really supported. But ultimately, time frame, she was born at 8:45 in the morning, right? So like, I got to the hospital at 3:30 and she was born at 8:45. So like, my sisters and like my family, like, they woke up and they were like, oh my gosh, she's born. Like, she was like, it just happened so fast, you know. Ultimately, like, it was just a whirlwind and like, boom, C-section, 8:45, born. Mm. I will say something I really struggled with was like how I felt about like my body after. I felt like it failed. Like, I wasn't able to do something that a woman was supposed to do. And I really did struggle with that quite a bit. Like, I remember being in my postpartum room and just looking at myself and seeing the scar and, or like the incision. And I was just like, what just happened? You know? And that was really hard for me. The recovery wasn't, I guess, as bad as I thought it would be. But I also think what was the worst experience for me was breastfeeding was the hardest thing I ever did and was so painful that I think it was like masking the pain of the C-section. Personally, I know that's not everyone's story, but like, my nipples were like cracked and bleeding and like all the things. And I was, as a dietitian, like passionate about making breastfeeding work. And I was so thankful that I found a lactation consultant that was seeing patients in person, and she saved my life and my breastfeeding journey. I was like, she's like, you were about to get mastitis. Like, I was so infected and just like, because I was pushing forward, like, no, you just got to get through the first couple weeks. No, no. Like, get help right away if you can. Oh my gosh. Don't wait till you're like, you know, bleeding and cracked and like all this stuff. It was not good. So,
were there some things specifically that she did that you remember helping?
Yeah. So I used a nipple shield for, I used it for like about a month and then I weaned off of it. I followed up with her weekly. She did give me like ointment. Like I used some ointment and stuff. And then she helped me latch her better. Definitely. I mean, but I was still struggling and they were so painful that the shield was used as a tool that just helped get through that initial, again, for like a month I used it and then we weaned off of it and I breastfed my first daughter for 16 months. So highly recommend.
Girl, I've used nipple shields for every single one of my kids. For some anatomies, like some bodies just need that. And you wean off. Like, yeah. I don't know what it is, but yeah, when my milk comes in, I just need the shield. And then after a month or two or whatever, like I'm fine.
I mean, going forward, well, I did the same thing. I brought the shields to the hospital with me because I'm just like, I'm not doing that again. Like, I was educated. Like, I was like, no, not, you know. So, you know, I think they're a great
it's a tool.
A tool. And I tried at first, but once they started being painful, I was like, no, like, I'm not, why would I do this? I know there's something that can help. So that was my first birth. So in between, you know, my first birth and like my next pregnancy, I developed like severe postpartum anxiety. I think the first few months of having my first daughter with COVID, it was actually like you were so secluded from everybody, which helped in the beginning. But then as time progressed, it was like, okay, well, now what? Because there was no rules, right? Like no one knew what they were doing. And then all I knew is that I loved this little baby more than anything in the whole world. And I needed to protect her. And I didn't know what the best decision to do. And it caused a lot of anxiety. I felt like something was going to happen to her. Something was going to happen to me. Because it like manifested into like, you know, all these other, you know, anxieties. And I wound up reaching out. So actually Michelle, who was my midwife, she's also a psychiatrist. And so at first, though, I thought she was a therapist. Like, I wasn't sure. So I reached out to her and, you know, she was amazing. Like, she got on the phone with me and just talked me through things and was like, listen, like, I'm not like a counselor therapist. She's like, I do medication. She goes, but I'm going to like, you know, give you some names and numbers of some therapists. So I wound up finding a therapist, working with somebody. And ultimately, long story short, but like wound up wanting to try medication because it just wasn't helping. And I wound up still following up. Then I followed up with Michelle. So she would manage like my medication. I wound up going on like a low dose SSRI and I felt better. I actually got a new therapist because I just felt like I wasn't like vibing with the other one. And that's part of the journey too, finding different people that work for you. But my whole thing was, oh, but before I have another baby, I want to go off medication. Like, I don't want to be on it. Like, that was my thing, whatever. Even though Michelle educated me, she's like, it is okay. Like, the baby is safe with your level of anxiety. And, you know, she looked at the whole picture, right? So she educated me that it was okay, but I decided to go off of it. And then ultimately, the anxiety came back 10 times worse. And this was all before I got pregnant. And I was thankful because I think I needed to go through that to reassure that that was the best decision for me. And ultimately, I went back on and I haven't looked back since. It makes me feel like a normal person. And I've used it now in my two pregnancies. So not for everybody, of course not. But, you know, that was something that I really struggled with. And, you know, I know I'm not the only one out there that deals with that. And I feel like it doesn't get talked about a lot. And I, you know, wish I would hear more people sometimes. I remember when people have brought it up and I'm like, you feel like a normal person, you know?
Totally. Just like a nipple shield, it's a tool, right? Like you are using it as a tool to have a experience that's not riddled with anxiety. And how beautiful that you already had like a midwife, like,
oh my God,
locked and loaded.
Thank God for her.
Who had the ability to prescribe. Like, that's like
a
win.
Yes. I was definitely, I I have to say, because I know everyone struggles sometimes with like providers, and I cannot say enough good things about the provider, my providers. Like, they have been through all my issues and pregnancies and have been amazing. So ultimately, like, I got pregnant with my second daughter. So it was like a few months, like after I like decided to go back on the medication, and I got pregnant a couple months after. My pregnancy for my second daughter was very healing for me, because I knew I went into it with in such a better mental place, and I knew I wanted to have a VBAC. I wanted to educate myself. I found like the podcast, like I just started like reading about it and talking like with the midwives about it, and they were like very on board. They were very pro VBAC, and like just talk to you like a person, and just like sat there and would like look at the pros and cons of all the situations. Like, it wasn't just like fear mongering or, you know, pushing you in one direction. Like, it was just, they were very educational about the whole process. I continued the medication and therapy. So that was great. And what she really helped me develop, and what I attribute to my successful VBAC, was I developed boundaries that I felt comfortable going into my birth with. So that's what something that helped me. I knew for me, if I started to see her heart decelerating, like I knew what the signs and symptoms of what potentially could be going wrong, right? And I was like, you know, if it happens multiple times, like, I'm not comfortable with that. And so, like, I'll see how I feel at the time. Obviously, I didn't want to create a hard and fast, like, rules to, you know, like a birth plan, right? Like, I was like, I want to have boundaries, but also be able to, like, go with the flow and trust my provider. So I was like, I'm not comfortable if they come in multiple times with heart decels. I don't want to mess with it. Like, I'm scared of what happened last time. So creating boundaries was like a big thing for me, because I went in like, instead of like my brain starting to like trickle down, like, well, what if this, what if this, what if this? I'm like, nope, boundaries. This is what you're going to do. Like, if this happens, like, this is what you're going to, you know, like, I would just keep myself like, nope, like, you're not there yet. So don't create these like false scenarios in your head, you know? And my therapist really helped with like talking me through those situations that I would, you know, was anxious about. I also did a lot of birth affirmations, which I attribute, like, I was just in my head, like, birth is normal. Like, you can do this. Your body is capable of this, you know, kind of all the things that I was talking myself, you know, when I had my C-section and that my body failed me. I really had to work on that confidence again with myself and my body, and that I was capable of doing that. So I really think birth affirmations, like, I said it to myself every day, and I actually said it like when my water broke and I was in the mirror, like, you got this, like, just putting confidence in myself. I had to do that to just kind of help reframe my thoughts. And another little thing that I don't know if you guys, did you ever watch Call the Midwife on Netflix? Okay. Love yes. that show. And I really attribute so that helped me, because it made birth normal. It's like 1950s East End of London. Like, these women are just doing it. And you're just like, I could do this. Like, come on. Totally. I don't know. It normalized birth for me that I feel like was so over-medicalized. And so that was like something that I just loved. I still love watching it, but like, I really like, it was like a pregnancy thing for me. Like, I loved watching that show while I was pregnant. I don't know.
I did the same thing That's with my amazing. Second. I think all the seasons just got back up on Netflix or something. Like, they're all there.
Oh my gosh.
Such a comfort
Such
show.
Such a great show. Such a great show. So highly recommend that. It's so good.
It's so good.
I actually went into spontaneous labor with my second daughter. So at 38 weeks, my water broke at 5:45 in the morning. Yeah, like, and the same thing.
Was it like the movies this time too?
It was almost, that's why it was so redemptive. It was really so similar to my first birth, but like, my headspace was so much better. Like, I wasn't sitting there shaking. I was like, I remember going to the bathroom, like, no, you're going to do this. Like, you can do this. Like, I talked myself through it. Like, I remember with my first, like, I called my mom hysterically crying. Like, I was so scared to go again. It was crazy times, but I felt so much more confident, like, you're going to do this, and like knowing it was a VBAC and you have your boundaries and you have your support system. You have, my husband's like the greatest. I haven't mentioned him at all. He's probably like listening and like, hello, what about me? But he's like literally the greatest husband in the world. So I was like, you got this, you know, and I felt really confident going in. I was GBS positive again, so I had to get the antibiotics. I know. So I went in, I got the antibiotics, and she was like, all right, so you can go home if you want. Like, you could walk, like, you're only dilated to a one. Like, what do you want to do? And I was like, well, I already said goodbye to my toddler. So, because she was like 2.5 at the time. And I'm like, I'd rather just, like, this is a VBAC. Like, I want to be in the hospital. Like, I'm comfortable. I love you guys. Like, I kind of wanted to stay. So she's like, all right. She's like, how about we try like pumping and walking and bouncing on a ball? And I was like, sure. Like, let's try it. So I did all those things for like a couple hours or whatever it was. You know, she's like, I'm going to check in on you. We'll see how you're doing. She's like, but I'm not going to be overly checking you because I don't want to introduce like, you know, the risk of infection. So they were just like, they're the best. All of them. Every single midwife I've dealt with are like, they're awesome. I'm so, so grateful for them. After like a few hours, like, she's like, all right, like, so our options are, you could do like a Foley bulb, and she's like, or we could also try a low dose of Pitocin. And, you know, she kind of was educating me on like, you know, how to kind of move things along a little bit. And I was like, that's fine. We could try the Foley. So I opted to go with the Foley, and I have to say that was so painful. I don't know if like you guys ever got that, but oh my gosh, that was, for me at least, like, it started right away, like cramping and just really like contractions, like coming on so strong. I knew I wanted an epidural right away. So, I mean, I knew I wanted an epidural, but I was going to wait. But once that started, I was like, oh no, like, I knew I'm getting one. So why would I wait until I'm in excruciating pain? Let me just get one now. And once I got the epidural, I have to say, like, it was great. It was like perfectly placed. It was like one of those like low, like it was just like the middle of my body. I was able to move my feet. Like, I felt like the pain was gone, but like, I didn't feel like completely numb or anything like that. I kind of just hung out. Like, I remember everyone texting me like, what's going on?
That's a great anesthesiologist.
It was, out of all three of, yes, it's definitely was the best one.
That's amazing.
I got the epidural. So I was around like 2:30. I got the epidural. They just had me like changing positions, and they started the Pitocin. They actually decided, so it fell out at like 5 centimeters, I believe. That's when the Foley bulb falls out. But then I stalled again. So like, I was like, the contractions weren't picking up. And so they decided to, they're like, listen, like, again, up to you, but if you want to start a little bit of Pitocin, I'm like, that's fine. Like, I just, you know, things are going well. She's tolerating everything okay. Like, let's keep, you know, that's fine. So they did a very low and slow Pitocin, maybe around like 6 or 7. Again, kind of just like hung out, like watched TV, like hung out with my husband. She was cruising on down, I guess. Like, everything was fine. All of a sudden, I felt so much pressure. Like, I was like, oh my gosh. Like, they're like what everyone says, like, you feel like you're going to poop. Like, it just, the pressure, like, down there. And then they checked me and they were like, oh yeah, you're 10. Like, baby's right there. And I just remember like feeling, I actually had my husband take a picture, because I was like, did I progress to a 10? Like, I'm going to have a baby, like, vaginally, like, I'm going to do this. I was so excited. But then shortly after the picture, I started throwing up, unfortunately, because I was transitioning to being ready to push. But so I threw up, and then I pushed for about 10 minutes, and I pulled her out of me. My midwife literally was like, reach your hands down. And I like pulled her right up to my chest. And yeah, she was, it was like the greatest moment. And I actually remember in that moment being like, that can't be the only time I do that. Like, cause my husband didn't want a third and I did. So I was like, no. Like, I have to do that again. So yeah, it was a successful VBAC at 10:09 PM. She was born. And we were so excited. After my birth, like, the bleeding wouldn't stop. I did have a hematoma that wouldn't stop bleeding. They had to, like, recatheterize me and, like, pack it. Wound up being fine, but that was kind of, like, a little thing. And I had a second degree tear. So that was, yeah, that was that. And breastfeeding, same thing. Like, we did great. We breastfed for 18 months, and I had to use a nipple shield for about a month. And I had my amazing lactation consultant, and that was that. Yeah. So that was my VBAC, which I was so excited about. And I mean, I have pictures from her. I sent you the one of, like, the twins, but, like, the pictures I have from my second daughter's birth is really cool. Cause, like, I have the pictures of, like, my husband took them all, just, like, me, like, pulling her up, and everyone was like, oh my gosh. Like, I was, like, crying. So looking at those pictures, you could see her. It was really cool.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So
yeah. Send them all to us. We'll make a reel.
We want to see.
Oh my God. Okay.
Yeah, totally.
I'll send them to you because they're really cool.
I do it. Yeah.
I love that your birth was so, like, that it started so similarly to others, because I think that's something we hear so much in our community is like, oh my gosh, what if the same scenario happens again? And we have a birth trauma therapist local to me. Her name's Ashley Ward. Holla at Ashley. And she says, over and over again, it feels the same, but it's not the same. And I think your birth story, like, so illustrates that. Like, you could have easily gotten in the moment and been like, this feels the same. Like, this doesn't feel any different. It feels like the same exact, but look at the outcome that was different. You even had the same provider. Like, I mean, truly, you had, I just think it's really cool that, like, you are such a testament to it. It can be a different outcome, a different baby, a different birth, which is so special.
It was really crazy that happened. The same,
I have chills, especially what you said, Lily. It feels the same, but it's not the same. And I connect a lot with you, Erin, because I've had a lot of anxiety, mental health stuff too. And to see, it almost threatens to undo all the hard work that you've done when things start the same. And those intrusive thoughts sneak in and they threaten to, like, steal away your joy and your peace. But I'm so proud of you for not letting that happen. And for looking like that, so powerful to look yourself in the eyes and say, no, we're not going there. Like, oh my gosh, I'm chilled. Oh,
it did. So, it, like, took a lot of work.
I'm so proud of
but
you.
But it's, yeah, it was. And that's the thing. I, like, always love to, like, share that with anyone that, like, cause I, you know, love talking about, like, birth or, like, babies. And when, like, just knowing, like, I didn't think I would be that person. I didn't. Like, I, you know, and not that whoever anyone chooses is their own journey, but, like, I'm not going to lie. Like, once I had a C-section, I was like, I guess I'm always going to have a C-section now. Like, that's just what's, cause I'm just going to, like, you know, schedule it. And again, that's totally fine if that's what people choose. But, like, the fact that I was like, I educated myself and then I worked on myself and my mental health. And, like, I have to say, like, I was really proud of myself, like, after. I was like, wow, I did that. Like, that is awesome, you know?
As you should be.
Yeah.
That's the stuff that changes you for the rest of your life.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Okay. So the twins. I'm so excited.
So twins. So I convinced my husband that, you know, I wanted a third. He did not. Ultimately got my way, obviously. Not that that happens all the time, but we got pregnant around, so we weren't really, like, preventing. We got pregnant, like, when my second daughter was about a year old. And unfortunately, that did end in a miscarriage. So I got pregnant. I was pregnant. It was December of 2023. And then I had my miscarriage of, it was January 2nd of 2024. So, and it was, you know, really, really hard and, you know, awful. And I, you know, hold space for anybody that's gone through that, because it was like a nightmare. So the craziest thing that happened, though, was apparently I ovulated like 2 weeks later and we were not being careful. And I got pregnant before I got my period back. Yeah. So obviously there was a lot more, like, details that went, because, like, we, like, went to, you know, had to go to my doctor, like, the midwives. And then, you know, I didn't need a DNC or anything. And my body was, like, naturally doing everything. I actually wound up going in to the midwives to have an ultrasound to make sure all the tissue was released. I had an appointment and I actually got sick. I had COVID. And so I had to reschedule that appointment for a couple weeks later. And, you know, again, like, whatever, you know, apparently I ovulated. And I just remember thinking, like, I might have ovulated. And then I took a pregnancy test and I knew that the line was, like, went away. And so I saw a faint line. So I, at my appointment for my miscarriage, I told her, I was like, I think I might be pregnant again. And she's like, oh my gosh, really? And I showed her the picture and she's like, all right. She goes, let's go do blood work. And I was like, all right. So I did the HCG and it went from 60 to over, well over 300 in 48 hours. And I was like, wow, that's pretty crazy. But okay, didn't really think anything of it. So they set me an appointment for 6 weeks. They knew I was really anxious because of, like, you know, not getting my cycle back and, like, you know, just having the miscarriage and everything. So yeah, at that appointment, she had, like, actually they did, like, an over the belly ultrasound. And then she's like, can you just go, like, release your bladder? I just want to do a transvaginal real quick because she's like, everything is fine. She goes, she showed me the flicker of a heartbeat. She's like, but I just want to check something else. And then when I came back, she, like, put it up on the screen, two sacs and, yep, twins.
Wow.
It was my husband was with me because, thank God, but because I just had the miscarriage, so I just, like, wanted him to be there, and I was just so anxious about it. And when I saw two, and she goes, there are two heartbeats, like, there's two, I was like, what? Like, lost for words.
Taking a quick break from our episode to share this important stat with you. Did you know a 2025 retrospective cohort study published in the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology found that doula care was associated with about a 15.6 increase in VBAC rates compared to those without doula support? Lily and I love doulas, and we are doulas. The VBAC Link was founded by doulas Julie Frankham and Megan Heaton, who created a comprehensive VBAC course for doulas. It's fully self-paced, completely virtual, and when you complete it, you're added to the VBAC Link doula directory. You'll also earn 8 ICEA continuing education hours and become a VBAC certified doula. And if you're a parent looking for a VBAC Link certified doula, you can find one at thevbaclink.com/findadoula. All right, let's get back to the episode.
So that was just, you know, it was really so fun, though, like, being able to tell everybody that we're pregnant with twins, but, like, still being, you know, very careful about, you know, being nervous about what just happened and, you know, was my body recovered enough? And it was definitely stressful, but also, like, very exciting, right? Mm-hmm. And I was just so, you know, had so much support from, like, my friends and family, and it was awesome. But I will say, really hard pregnancy, really hard pregnancy. Shout out to all twin mamas out there, because especially twin moms with, like, toddlers, like, oh my gosh, that was an experience. I actually don't remember. A lot of 2024 was a complete blur to me because of that. So yeah, just very exhausted. And I was nauseous for like the whole time. I had, like, morning sickness, all day sickness, food aversions the entire time. And then at the end was so painful, right? So, like, that pressure and, like, just so big. And yeah, it took a lot out of me. As grateful as I was, like, it definitely, like, it took a lot out of me. We did find out it was a boy and a girl. So we have 3 girls, 1 boy, and that was really exciting.
What did that look like for your care? Were you able to stay with midwives where you are? Well, I'm in Colorado. So for us, you risk out of midwifery care if you have twins.
Really?
So you can, like, get your care, but, like, it has to be delivered by an OB. So I felt curious if it was the same for you.
No.
All. But it sounds like it wasn't.
No, I was able to stick with some midwives.
That's so great.
So I did have, so they did, like, a VBAC consult again. They said, even though I already had a VBAC, that, like, every pregnancy they do a VBAC consult. And it did have to be with the high-risk doctors. But I stayed with the midwives, and there was only that one consult that I had with them. And I have to say, they actually were more supportive than any other. Like, I thought they were going to tell me, like, you should have a C-section, like you already had a C-section, or like, you know, all the, they were like, so again, looked at like, okay, you have two toddlers, like you don't want another surgery. The twins were in a, they were like low and their heads were down. They even said that, like, even if baby B flips, like we could flip them around, like, or the midwives can't, like, they were so supportive. And I actually went into that consult thinking, like, I'm comfortable with all of this, like, but I'd really prefer if my body went into labor on its own. Like, I want to try, but I'm more comfortable if my body goes, you know, decides on its own. And they actually said, just if you needed to be induced, it doesn't mean that you're going to have a C-section. Like, I was so scared that I was just going to need a C-section anyway. So yeah, they really convinced me. And I was like, totally like, okay, like we're doing it. Like, I'm going to like see what happens. Like, I still was hoping I was going to go at that point. I was like, you know, 30 something weeks, but, or no, probably before 30 weeks, but I was like, all right, like, we'll see what happens. But if I need to be induced, like, cause they want to induce you by, 38 weeks here with, so I had die twins. So they have like their own placentas, their own sacs and everything. So like, it's kind of like, you know, it's just two separate pregnancies in the same body. Like, you know, they're fraternal twins, obviously. Yeah. I never knew so much about twins and the different types.
And it makes a difference too, because like some are more like quote unquote risky than others because of a shared placenta, yes, things like,
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so. Exactly. So yeah, it was good to know that like they, yeah, they had their own, like they call it like their own refrigerators and their own apartments. Like that's how they, it's like cool to like think of like, that's how someone phrased it. And I was like, that's true. So towards the end, I was like really uncomfortable and I started to get itchy. Now I will say I did not have the typical hands and feet itchiness. I actually, my arms, so my belly was so itchy, but that was from the stretching. So right, I was like, okay, it's itchy, but stretching. But my legs and my arms were, and not like unbearably itchy, but like noticeably itchy. I only knew about cholestasis, or how you can have the high bile acids, because my friend had it. That's the only reason why I would have even, I even thought about it and called my midwife and asked like about it. And she's like, hey, let's go get blood work done. I wouldn't have known if it wasn't for my friend telling me that it happened, like, you know, that it happened to her. So yeah, so they wound up getting blood work done and my bile acids were mildly elevated. So it wasn't like really elevated, but it was enough that they were like, we're not going to risk this. And I was over 37 weeks pregnant at that point. And so I wound up being induced actually. So, which, you know, again, I didn't want to, but then once that happened, and also I was so done at that point, I was so uncomfortable.
And cholestasis is definitely one of those cases, women of strength, that is a medical need for induction. You probably hear us talk all the time about, you know, avoiding induction unless it becomes medically necessary. And this is definitely one of those scenarios that like, it's a great opportunity to say like, this is a medically necessary induction and move forward with those next steps. So how did it feel though, to have wanted to go into spontaneous labor and then to be like faced with an induction conversation?
Yeah. So, I mean, I feel like going, you know, having spontaneous labor, my last two pregnancies, that's all I knew. And I knew how well I did with my second. And I was just really wanting that situation again because it was comfortable. So yeah, when she called me, actually what happened was I got swept. I actually had a doctor, I had a midwife appointment the day before and I got swept. I was like at my 37 week appointment. I could barely walk at this point. The pressure was so, I put myself on bed rest. Like I couldn't walk. Like I was so in so much pain, just like pelvic pain, the pressure. And so I was like, please, like, you know, you can do a sweep, like that's fine. Like actually I think I was like 2 to 3 centimeters, which again I know means nothing, but it was like, okay, like, you know, I felt like my body was working on something, right? So the next morning I bled and I'm just triggered from my miscarriage, even though I know that I was going to probably bleed because I got swept. So I called one of the midwives, who I have like a bunch of their like cell phone numbers because they're literally the best people in the world. And so I was like, hey, I'm bleeding. Like, and she calls me and she's like, hey, like one, that's normal. You got swept. You're 37 and two with twins. Like that's fine. But your bile acids were high, were mildly elevated. So we're actually recommending to induce you. And so, yeah, like I literally had to like, she's like, you can come in like whenever you want. And I was like, what? Like I was getting my daughter ready for preschool. Like, I'm like, what do you mean? I can come in whenever I want. Like, so yeah. So we end up dropping my daughter off at preschool, like giving my other daughter to my parents. And we went to the hospital and we got there around like 11, I think. And then I want to say by the time they started the low dose, I didn't do the Foley, but I had the low dose Pitocin that started around 12. So this is where things get like really crazy. So I started to feel uncomfortable, but nothing like, it wasn't like super intense. So I was like, all right, like I don't have to like get an epidural. No, I was like, why am I going to wait to get I know I'm going to get an epidural. I'm just an epidural person. Like I was going to get it. Why am I going to wait till I'm like screaming in pain? So I was like, all right, let's just, you know, that was, again, everyone has their own thing, but like, that was my, I was like, you know, I'm already, I was also in excruciating pain from just the pregnancy. So I was like, I could go for like the pressure being off of me right now. I can't even get up and move around. Like, so I decided to get the epidural, but I could tell that it only worked on like half my body. But because the contractions weren't aggressive yet, I wasn't really saying anything. In turn, not a good idea. So they came in, they did check me. I was progressing forward. Maybe I was at like a 5 or 6 or something. And when she went and checked me, she did another, she swept again, just because like we were, you know, trying to get things moving. All of a sudden, like labor started like crazy and the contractions were back to back to back. Like, I mean, again, just really intense. And I was like, oh, this epidural's not working, guys. Like, this is not working. And so they started like rushing in, like the anesthesiologist, they're trying to like see like if they can move like the needle in the right direction to like make sure it's getting the other side. And I am like screaming in pain. My husband is like holding my hand. I'm like biting him. I mean, I was like, I'm not mentally prepared for this. Like I did not mentally prepare for a natural like feelings. Like I had a great epidural with my second. So I'm like, was not planning for this at all. Everything was like such a blur in that moment. But when everything finally started working, I remember I turned a certain way, but once it started working, I was completely numb as if I was going to have a C-section. Like I could not wiggle my toes. I could not, I was like, how am I going to push? Like, so that was just like a whole thing. And then on top of that, I was exhausted. I like was like, someone, I need to take a nap right now. Like that was really intense. Like I'm not even sure of how long that time frame was. So my water didn't break yet. So they came in and they're like, all right, let's like, you know, you just had like crazy like pain and, you know, you had your contractions, like, let's see where you're at. And they're like, oh, you're like just about a 10. Like it was like went super quick. And then I was like, oh my God, I'm going to throw up. And so I start throwing up and they're like, oh, you're breaking your water. Okay. You're breaking your water. You're throwing up. They literally like saw it. Cause like I was, they were like ready to wheel me into the OR. So I don't know about where you guys live, but you have to give birth in the OR with twins or attempt to have like a vaginal birth in the OR. God forbid if baby B needs a C-section. So they were prepping the OR. So they're like, all right, listen, like the baby's head is like, you're ready. And I was like, please, I just need to like rest for a second. Like, please, I'm so tired. And she's like, all right, we're prepping the OR. Like, we're going to get you ready. But like, we really like got to go. Like, we have to go soon. Like he's right there. Like my son is baby A. So they're like waiting and we're waiting for one of the midwives to come because she wanted to be there for my birth. Her name is Kristen. She's like literally, again, one of like my favorite people in the world. And we're waiting for Kristen. She goes, screw Kristen. We got to get going. This baby's head is right there. She like lift up the cover. She goes, this baby's head is right there. And so she goes to the back of the bed and she starts to push it. And all of a sudden I go, gosh, I just feel the baby slide out of me and I scream, I think he came out. And so we're not even out of the door in the bed and they lift up the covers and there is my son on the bed, like just
on the bed.
And they're like, and baby A is out. Okay. And they just like put them up to my chest, and I'm like, what just happened? Like, I just had no idea. Like, it was just like, I was still tired. Like, I'm just like, what? Like, he just literally fell out and basically came out because I threw up. I kept throwing up, and I basically that pushed him out, basically. Like, it was crazy. So now we're not in the OR. We're still in the labor room, and everyone from the OR starts bum rushing into the labor room because now they're like, well, you're just going to stay here. And I'm like, okay. So they're like, we're not, the baby's already here. Like, we're not going to be like, you know, he's here. Like, we have him, like, you know, they're doing all their stuff. Also, like, he wasn't crying. Like, he was blue a little bit. Like, that was very scary. So they start doing the ultrasound and they're like, all right, where's baby B? And then they're like telling me, like, you know, all right, you have to like start pushing. And I'm just like, is he okay over there? Like, what's going on? Like, it was really crazy. So then they're telling me to push. I can't feel anything. So I'm like, okay, like, I'm going to do my best, but I just try to bear down and like push. They're like, okay, you're doing great. And so I pushed, and 15 minutes, my daughter, yep, popped on out, and there they were. So yeah, so that was crazy. So now they have the two of them not set up for a twin birth in this birthing room, in this, you know, the hospital room. And yeah, it was quite the story.
Oh my God. Yes.
So that was the twin. And I will say, like, I did not tear with them. Like, that was, I have to say, like, recovery with them was amazing. They were 5 pounds, 14 ounces and 6 pounds, 1 ounce. So, you know, they were good little sizes, but,
yeah.
And breastfeeding was very similar. Use my lactation consultant, the nipple shield, and I'm still nursing them 1 year later. So yeah. And they're amazing.
Wow. And you said they just had their birthday.
Yeah. So that was like super exciting. And something I did want to mention was that, so 3 weeks later, the twins were like 3.5 weeks old, the little girl, she started throwing up. I was nursing my son in the middle of the night, and I heard her like throwing up in the middle of the night. And I was like, that's weird. But, you know, babies throw up, they spit up, like, but I kind of like looked at it, and it was like a yellow color. And I was like, this is definitely weird, but okay, I'll monitor it. Fast forward, she proceeded to throw up after every feed, the next couple feeds. So now I know she hasn't tolerated any feeds. Ultimately, I wound up taking her to the doctor, and we had to rush her to the emergency room. She wound up having a malrotation with a volvulus. Her intestine was completely twisted, and she was rushed into emergency surgery within an hour or two of being at the hospital. And it was absolutely insane. We were there for about a week. My son had to stay with me in the hospital. I was still breastfeeding. I mean, they were only 3 weeks old. Like, again, same hospital I delivered at. The children's hospital was absolutely amazing. Like, they let like my son stay with us, and like, just, you know, just were so caring. And it was very emotional, like everyone seeing this little tiny 3 week old baby like coming out of like in PACU. Everyone was like crying. Like, it was horrible, but I'm happy to report that she is thriving and that she's doing amazing, and they caught it. They didn't have to resect anything. But just any moms, if you ever see like throwing up, like yellow color, they say projectile. She was not projectile. It was just throwing up. So just yellow color, like, go to the ER right away, you know, just for any.
Trust your mom.
Yes. Yes.
Did they say that's an in utero thing that they just didn't catch, or it's something that happens after?
It's a congenital. Yeah. So it's just the way that her intestines, like, so as she was getting older and her intestines were growing, it was slowly twisting until eventually it just completely, you know, got blocked.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Wow. That is wild. Mm-hmm. So how was your postpartum mental health with all of that chaos between the craziness of the delivery, the unexpected cholestasis, the, you know, all of that?
Yeah. So I'm not going to lie that it wasn't like the best. I mean, I feel like I'm still in it a little bit, like just them being a year. I mean, we're better in the flow now, but it was like, yeah, like it was manageable, as in like I wasn't getting the extreme intrusive thoughts and stuff like that, but it was definitely a lot. It was a lot to handle, and it just felt like such a whirlwind of just like all this like chaos. And then it was like the PTSD, like even to this day, like if I hear them crying, or my daughter specifically crying, like I'm very triggered, and just like, you know, I mean, they're over a year old and I'm still waking up with them in the middle of the night because like I just like I can't hear her scream, just like is very like, it just like brings me back sometimes. Yeah. And then like the health stuff and just like trying to protect them from like things happening, like I definitely can see my mind running, but I've definitely continued like I'm still do my best to see my therapist. It's really hard with four kids, like five and under. So I think I'm doing the best I could do, but you know, definitely have a lot of rough days. Absolutely. You know, it's definitely rough. So, you know.
So if somebody, I guess I have a question for just twin moms in general, what do you find is the most helpful? Because I often hear people say unhelpful things to twin parents. Mm-hmm. What are some really helpful things that people have said or done for you to help you in this season?
I think two of the biggest things were just people coming over and just helping. I mean, even having like newborns, like I was like open arms to like help because I needed, because like I'm like a twin mom. So twin moms need to help even if they don't have other kids. But I also had this a four-year-old and a 1 year old, like the baby wasn't even two yet, like at that, when they were born. Like, so that was super helpful. Like people coming to like help with the toddlers was big, and making like food and like bringing food over and just like, you know, helping around the house. Honestly, it really feels like such a blur. Like at this point, like I can't even believe we got through those like early stages of like not sleeping. But I just think like people stepping up. And also I remember having to let go, like with my first two, I was very controlling. I did a lot of things. Like I would choose to change every single diaper. If I was there, I would do it. I wouldn't let someone else do it. Or, you know, I had to do all like everything, the bath or whatever. And with the twins, I was like, I have to learn to let go. People want to help, and I need to allow them to come in and help. And yeah, so that was, I would definitely say like people bringing over like food and just support and saying, hey, like, do you need me? Like, I remember as my husband's grandmother coming over, and she's like, I don't feel like I'm helping. I'm just holding, you know, my daughter, like the baby. And I was like, that is the most helpful thing you could be doing right now. Like, she's not crying and you're holding and snuggling her and she's sleeping. Like, that was amazing. Thank you. You know?
Yeah.
So
that's amazing.
Yeah.
Erin, your stories are so phenomenal, and just thank you for being so raw and vulnerable and sharing all the things. I know that there are multiple pieces of your story that someone out there needs to hear. Mm-hmm. So just thank you for being on today and for just giving it all to us, because it was fun to be on the ride with you. A bed baby? Are you kidding me?
So I know. Good. I know. It is a crazy story. I was going to say too, like, I don't know how this works, but of course, if anyone wants to reach out and like talk, like, I'm always open to it. I actually like decided to apply to share my story because I posted on like the Facebook group, and like all these women were like, oh my gosh, you need to like apply to share your story. Like, that's so crazy. And so like, if anyone ever like hearing my story and connects in any way, I would love to, you know, chat with anybody if they're, you know, if they have a question or just looking for support.
That's amazing. And that's a great plug for our Facebook community too. So Women of Strength, if you have not joined our private Facebook community, you can find us at the VBAC link. No, it's not. It is? Is it the VBAC link community? That's what it's called.
I think so. Yeah.
I was like, That's her name. It's the Feedback Lane community. I was making us a new cover photo today, Brain so fog. I should know what our community is. But you can find us on Facebook, not just our page, but a private community. There's over 20,000 other mamas and doulas and all kinds of fun stuff in there and birth stories that get shared all the time. Erin, talk about your dietitian business really fast and where people can find you if they want to connect about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm a registered dietitian. I absolutely love what I do. I do help a lot of wide variety of different types of people. My main focus is creating a healthy, balanced relationship with food and developing sustainable habits that you can bring into your life for the rest of your life, not just something that's temporary. So I really work on, you know, not quick fixes, like not, you know, looking at things in very black and white, like all or nothing mentality. I really want to help you live in the gray area and develop, again, sustainable habits. So you can follow me on the.dietitian.mama. So that's my Instagram. And then my link to my website is on
my Instagram.
We'll put it in the show
notes.
Yeah,
but I take insurance and I'm always looking to help anyone that wants to hear.
Yay. I love that. All right, Lainey. Well, thank you again. You are so amazing. It was so wonderful to connect with you. And we can't wait for this story to be shared with the world because it needed to be.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode and for being a part of our community. One of my favorite parts of the VBAC Link is the community itself. When I was pregnant and planning for a VBA 2C, the VBAC Link community group on Facebook truly became a virtual village for me. It's where I could see real VBAC stories, ask questions without judgment, and get encouragement from people who genuinely understood what I was preparing for. If you are planning a VBAC and want support as you get ready, head over to Facebook and search the VBAC Link community, because women of strength become even stronger together.